Welcome to Project Safe Neighborhoods podcast series presented by the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice Assistance, Office of Justice Programs, the United States Department of Justice. As you know, Project Safe Neighborhoods is a nationwide commitment to reduce gun and gang crime in America by networking existing local programs that target gang and gun crime, and providing these programs with additional tools necessary to be successful. Since its inception in 2001, approximately $2 billion have been committed to this initiative. This funding is being used to hire new federal and state prosecutors, support investigators, provide training, distribute gun lock safety kits, deter juvenile gun crime, and develop and promote community outreach efforts, as well as to support other gun and gang violence reduction strategies. NCPC is proud to be a partner with BJA on this very important work. This podcast series from NCPC invites experts from the field to share the latest emerging trends, information, and success stories, including strategies in gang and gun prevention, violence prevention. We hope you will find this series beneficial to your work and the resources provided to be helpful. I am your host, Chuck Sarowski, the Master Trainer with the National Crime Prevention Council. Today's podcast is on girls and gangs. Gang violence and activity can overpower a neighborhood and implant fear in its members, infringing on citizens' rights to live a safe, flourishing lifestyle in a protected environment. Many times, gang members congregate in areas such as a community park, claiming that territory has their own. It makes it very difficult for children to play in a safe environment. In many neighborhoods, people are not able to sit and on their own front porch or walk the children to school without being harassed by gang members. Now there are gangs cropping up all over the country whose membership includes just girls. This podcast will explore the issue and challenges that exist between the increase in the number of girls involved with gangs and the public perception of the role of girls in these gangs. Mr. Tody Avendorf served 40 years in law enforcement. During that time, he served with the Illinois Department of Corrections, the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, and the last 20 years with the Prince George's County Police Department in Maryland. Detective Avendorf has been involved in numerous street gang investigations, most notably Operation Monodora, DC Sniper, and numerous Bloods and Palmer Park Crew street gang incidents. He has been conducting law enforcement training since 1977 with an emphasis on street gangs and organized crime. He has provided gang training classes in several states, as well as the Midwest Counter Drug Training Center, Northeast Counter Drug Training Center, Rocky Mountain, HIDA, Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, and at numerous gang conferences since 1992. He is the president of Tony Avendorf Associates, LLC, a law enforcement training and consultant business, which also provides private investigative services and public and motivational speaking. Tony, thank you so much for assisting NCPC with today's podcast.
You're very, very welcome. It's always a pleasure to work with NCPC?
Tony, this, you know, we travel around the country. You know, we're working with law enforcement and, you know, the over 4,000 NCPC partners that are out there. And, you know, more and more places that we're going, we are being hit by teachers and parents alike asking us, are there really these female gangs in the United States?
Absolutely. You know, the female gangs alone, and this is just not counting girls that are involved or hang out with their male counterparts, but female gangs alone comprise between 10 and 12% of the total gang culture in the United States. And in the past 5 years, we've seen an increase of about 150% of female gang activity independent of the male gangs.
That's a staggering number. So we're talking about 150% increase. That's just crazy. Now, why do you think these girls are joining these gangs at such a rapid rate?
Well, there's a lot of factors. One, and I need to distinguish between where these girls come from, because I travel also, and to especially the southern states, we're seeing a lot of these girls not come from low-income environments. They're coming from middle-class and upper-middle-class environments also. So it's you know, this myth about, you know, gangs being just on a lower socioeconomic stratosphere is not true today. But wherever you come from, and one of the things I have found out through actually working some of these female gangs and talking to a lot of the girls, every year for the past 5 years, I've spoken at a conference, a women's conference, at the Maryland State Prison for Women, and I deal with females that are involved in street gangs when they went into the penitentiary. They continue this while they're inside, but this whole conference is for their eventual release within 6 months to a year. And there is a high rate of physical and sexual abuse. Now, this comes from either their home life or whatever home life they have, if they even have a home life. And the gangs provide an outlet for this. The majority of these women, especially white women who have been involved with biker gangs, have this high rate of sexual and physical abuse. One of the things we see out here is the self-affirmation that the girls feel that they have to prove something. You know, I've seen that in the 40 years I was a police officer, where women would come on the job and they feel that they have to prove something to their male counterparts. Well, it's the same thing with the gang. And we're seeing today now that these girls are not dependent on the males to form their own gangs and do the same things that the males do. I see a sense of power in talking to a lot of these girls. One young lady I had contact with several years ago, she is a Blood gang member from Los Angeles. And the minute she hit the high school here, one of the high schools here, she was different. And even the gang members knew she was different. And a rival tried her, and she laid him out. She actually knocked him out. And when I got out to the school and I interviewed her, to her was a sense of power. Her family had sent her here to Maryland to live with her grandmother because she was always getting in trouble back in Los Angeles. But the thing was that she couldn't escape this. It's everywhere she went, it was who she was. However, now she's out. I talk to her once a month. She calls me once a month to tell me what she's doing. She's living in North Carolina, and she's got married to the son of a minister. Family members are gang members. We see a lot of that, especially growing up in a house where there are male gang members. These girls assimilate. Boyfriends. Girls join for protection. Girls join because they're aggressive. It wasn't that girls weren't aggressive when I was coming up, but they're more aggressive today. There's a sense of belonging. Money plays a big role in gang participation everywhere you go. Drugs, neglect, a need for a family environment, because as we go back to, the abuse, there is no sense of family or need for family, so they find it with their gang counterparts. And a lot of these girls, especially with the Latino gangs, they're actually forced by male gang members to participate. MS-13 is known for that, and a lot of the Latino gangs force the girls into gang life to control them.
Now, in the United States specifically, based upon your travels and your interviews, just like you just spoke about with this young lady, what are some of the trends that you're seeing in these female gangs in the United States?
They're more independent of their male counterparts. There was for years, when you would teach these gang classes, it was always the girls were hanging out with the homeboys, or they were there for the homeboys. But a lot of people didn't realize that these girls, even though they hung out with the homeboys, were doing things on their own. They were moving away from that dependence on having or needing a man to do what they needed to do. They commit the same violent crimes as males. And women can be a lot more aggressive than males because they're more passionate. When they commit a crime or they commit a violent crime, you see more passion because it's just, that's a woman, passion. I see them becoming replicas of the male gang. They're dressing like the male gang members. They're assimilating more like the male gang members now. And a big part today is sexual orientation. The Washington, D.C. area, I'm going to throw in Baltimore, has a high number of gay lesbian gangs. And these are girls who because of their sexual orientation, and a lot of them don't even really know what their orientation is. So they form these gangs and it's that affirmation of who they are. Social media. The girls are worse than the males. This is absolutely off the chain when it's that he say, she say. So somebody says that so and so said something about so and so and it's on. And the girls react quicker than the males do. So Facebook and Twitter and all these social media outlets today have really, and YouTube, because everybody's got a camera on their phone, those three especially have promoted a lot of the gang activity and the gang violence that we see around the country. And then the crimes they commit. Assault. Prostitution. Robbery. Vehicle theft, carjacking, theft, murder. And then there's an increase in white-collar crime. I've had police officers ask me, well, I didn't think they were intelligent enough to do white-collar crime. And one of the things that we need as law enforcement or working with gangs is to realize these gang members are not dumb. They're smart. They're extremely intelligent. And I've learned that throughout the years of interviewing these gang members. They're into credit card fraud, identity theft, bank fraud. A lot of these female gang members get jobs at restaurants. And you purchase food or you're dining and you give them your credit card. They have a little tool that they can make a copy of your strip. They give you your receipt back, and then when you get your bill, you see that there's purchases that you didn't know anything about. And this is how they're working. Bank fraud. A lot of female gang members get jobs in banks. A lot of female gang members get jobs in police departments or in government facilities. If they've never had a record, they've never been arrested, you don't know who they are. So those are some of the crimes and some of the trends that we're seeing throughout the United States right now.
So a little earlier, you kind of started to allude a little bit to the involvement of, you know, the Hispanics and the women in the Hispanic culture. What are some of the cultural differences, even among racial lines, that you may or may not be seeing out there?
Well, you know, even now that I'm retired, I see it. And I run into a lot of gang members I worked. And it's always business. This is never a personal thing. They'll even ask me, you know, how retirement is. But I, especially with African American girls, they're far more independent. They're into their own thing. They don't want to be bothered by anybody. Once again, I alluded to the gay lesbian gangs. We see more of that with the African American girls than we see with the other cultures and races. Latino girls are very, very loyal to their male counterparts. However, we're seeing independence. When we were working Operation Mano Dura, and we were tanking down MS on the RICO cases. We discovered that a lot, because MS-13 will jump in females as gang members, but they're not allowed to form their own cliques. And we were seeing girls trying to form their own cliques, and the male gang members would find out about it and punish them. So, you know, you're starting to see them kind of like drift away from this, I'm going to be loyal to the homeboy thing. They want to do their own thing also. Asian girls are also loyal to their male counterparts, probably even a little bit more. And they're not afraid to put in work, and that's committing crimes and doing anything to be down with the gang. Once again, the Asian gangs tend to stay within their own communities unless they're bothered, then they branch out. Huge number of Asian gang activity in high schools throughout the country. Milwaukee is a good example, especially the West Coast, where we actually had incidents here in Maryland where Asian gang members were really trying to make a point at the high schools they were going to. And then the white females will join either black or Latino gangs. I don't see the white girls forming their own independent gangs. However, one trend that I do see are the biker old ladies. They're considered property of their old man, and that's an entirely different trend. But once again, they don't branch out. You don't see outlaw motorcycle female gang members. However, I do see that in the African American community, with a lot of the crotch rocket clubs, the females try to model themselves after the males, and we see them selling drugs and a few other crimes. But in general, that's what we see with the cultural differences along the racial lines.
Extremely interesting, and that's some very good information for folks that are out there listening. Tony, let me ask you this. You know, you've been doing this for a long, long time, probably much longer than most folks, and we really do love the ability to have you in. I really do think it helps to educate our listeners. But, you know, as we come toward the end of the podcast here, what are some of the solutions for females if they do want to leave gang life?
Well, before I go into some of these solutions, let me say this. Law enforcement officers, criminal justice professionals, sometimes forget that there are other solutions other than locking folks up. I learned that early in my career. When I was young, growing up on the south side of Chicago, I ran with a gang. But the big difference is in the early 60s to the middle 60s, you had support. In other words, you had people who if they saw you out there, they would bring you in. If it hadn't been for two Chicago police officers who pretty much interviewed me, let's say, after a fight I got into, I probably wouldn't be giving this podcast, because there were a lot of things going on in my life back in those days. But I learned, and I was actually ostracized by other police officers, which I really didn't care. I would go out of my way to help these people, because people helped me when I was young. And the young lady I spoke to, who was a Fruitown 36 Brim from Los Angeles, no one had ever reached out to her before, especially a cop. And I found that gang members actually look at police in a different vein when they see the person, not the badge holder. And whenever I would interview gang members, I would never wear my badge around my neck or on my belt, because I wanted them to see me as Tony Avendorf. So we would talk about how you can better yourself. You must want, you have to want to leave. Avendorf, I want to get out. Well, okay. You can tell me that all day, but I have to see it in your eyes. And if I don't see it in your eyes, I know that you're not telling me the truth, that you're trying to find out what I know. You must also understand the consequences if you leave. Because a lot of these gangs, especially the more organized national gangs, they have an issue with you wanting to leave. Now, have there been gang members that have left and not been assaulted or murdered? Yes. Your smaller local gangs, you can just move on. They really, once you leave the neighborhood, that's it. Unless you go back to the neighborhood and continue to get involved in trouble. But you have to understand what these consequences are. We put numerous female gang members in protective custody, and the federal government provided new identities for a lot of them. But you have to understand those consequences. You have to trust an adult. I grew up hating the Chicago police. And no one ever thought I would be the police because of what I saw back in those days. But those two Chicago police officers, I learned to trust. And a lot of people who know me know I've been involved in the sport of judo since 1953. I did not know they were two black belts who taught at the Hyde Park YMCA. And until I got with them, they changed my life completely. So I learned to trust adults. Now, I trusted my father, but I was scared of my father. Back in those days, fathers were a little bit different. So, you have to learn to trust an adult. You must be committed to helping yourself. if you know, I can't help you if you can't help yourself. God can't help you if you can't help yourself. And you must not succumb to that male peer pressure. And that's a lot of what we talk about at the women's prison in Maryland. These women are so afraid that once they're released, they're going to see these men that they were hanging out with, and a lot of them were girlfriends too, and that they're going to be sucked back into that vacuum. So those are some of the solutions for females to leave. The male gang members are a lot different than the female gang members. But you have to learn how to work with them. If my whole theory about stopping a gang member is I was going to try to flip them no matter who they were. Trust. It's the same thing now as a professional investigator. The client has to trust me, and I have to trust the client. So you know the big thing is trust. And if you can trust that person who wants to help you, sincerely wants to help, then you can get out. You can provide an avenue for success and to become a positive part of society.
Well, Tony, I thank you so much for participating in this podcast. And for folks out there, this podcast can be downloaded on NCPC website, PSN, Gang Violence Prevention, landing pages at www.ncpc.org. This podcast has been presented by the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice Assistance and supported by grant number 2010-GPBXK-006. The Bureau of Justice Assistance is a component of the Office of Justice Programs, which includes the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the National Institute of Justice, the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, the SMART Office, and the Office for Victims of Crime. Her opinions in this document are those of the author and do not represent the official position or policies of the United States Department of Justice. Again, this is Chuck Sulawski with the National Crime Prevention Council. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Please stand by.